comes out with a brand new postulate. Every few years, he changes his viewpoint. We don't realize that because it's pretty hard to change the laws of motion. He's pretty well agreed, and we're pretty well agreed on the laws of motion, on the laws of the transmission of energy. We know that conservation of energy exists and so on. It's pretty hard to change that. But how is matter put together? What is the structure of space? Einstein blows into view following the line of Maxwell, Lorentz, and Fitzgerald, who were the forerunners on this. And we have a brand new theory, but he gets busy a year and a half ago, and we've got another brand new theory. In other words, basic structure on this thing is getting mauled around all the time. What happened to theta is somebody made an arbitrary and said, that's it. And if you don't believe that's it, the hell with you, bum. Now, you see, so it got to be an arbitrary, and men were prohibited from thinking on the subject. So we damned up the humanities badly. Now, when we talk about goals, there's an old phrase that comes in here, is all angels have two faces. This is a real old one. This is, by the way, as far as I know, about 3,000 years old. All angels have two faces. There is a black face and a white face. There is the face of creation and the face of destruction. So it is with a supreme being. Somebody comes along and tells you God is love, and if you don't believe it, he'll knock you to pieces. They don't see that they're postulating immediately that God has two faces. Destruction, creation. They cannot exist independently. Destruction, you really have to fool around with this for a while but to figure it out, but destruction theoretically couldn't exist very well without some construction. You'd have to construct something in order to bring about the destruction of any great wide mass of something or other. But it certainly tends in that direction better or more. It's more hidden that destruction comes up as a creation. For instance, you destroy a life organism, it at least has learned what destroys it as the theta withdraws. Could be, you see. There's a little tiny bit on the evolutionary chain, something like that. But these two things are not separable. You can't construct without destruction. That's obvious to us. So there are two drives, two sides to each dynamic. There's two sides, then, of purpose to nest. This is not true to say the conservation of energy is the basic law, because it's not. Here is mist existing in chaos. It's trying to persist, but it builds up into something or it knocks something apart and breaks down. It goes in these two different directions. It's not as well understood as theta is, as far as the purpose and goal is concerned. While we're here in theta, obviously, there is survive and succumb. We said in the first book we had, dynamic principle of existence is survival. That's fine. That's half the statement. The dynamic principles of existence are survive or succumb. One or the other. It's a dynamic principle to succumb. There is actually a pressure, a thrust, and a persistence toward succumbing. So we have two purposes. In theta, two purposes in an organism. Survive or succumb. We handily, this tone scale has arbitrary numbers on it, but that does not make it any the less workable nor practical. Below 2.0, that organism is trying to succumb and draw apart to create another organism. The organization below 2.0 is actually trying to destroy itself. The drive is toward death. Now, the higher up it is toward 2.0, the more it seems to wish to persist as itself and merely bring destruction elsewhere. But you've got a withdrawing periphery of succumbing below 2.0, and above 2.0 you have an expanding periphery of survival. See how it could be? You've actually got here, you can draw it this way, or you can draw it this way. Here's a V. Here's 4.0. Here's 0. Right here, at the bottom of the V, we have the point where the organism ceases to exist as an individual. Now, from here on down, you could say offhand, the organism was bringing destruction to an expanding periphery. Here's the width of this periphery here at 1.5. 1-5 tries to bring destruction to mess and organisms and life forms and so forth around it, organizations and so on. It tries to do that. 1.5, that's anger, destruction, so forth. We get down here to 1.1. See, the periphery has narrowed. The destruction which can be accomplished here at 1.1 can be accomplished at best covertly. And it's usually concentrated on a few individuals or something like that. It's directed. And the amount of destruction is beginning more and more to feed back to include a destruction of the individual. At 1.5, the organism doesn't intend to die itself. At 1.1, it thinks it might. Down at 0.5, it's claiming that it will, but it is trying to bring destruction to a little bit of the environment. Neglect. It tries to bring destruction to one or two individuals, as opposed to 1.1's effort to bring destruction to an organization or something like that. The 0.5 down in the grief band is trying to kill one, two people, three people, four people, something like that, or something, or an idea, or something like that. That's a 0.5. But the periphery of destruction is much less, and the recognizability of the effort is much less. And down below that, we get the organism just above death, pretending that it is dead itself, and then we get death itself. Up here, we're trying to get survival just for the organism. This organism is trying to survive for its, more or less for itself. If it gets up here to 2.5, it'll survive for itself and maybe a couple of pals or maybe the family or something. And we got up here to 3.0, well, it'll survive for itself and for some friends and for the organization. Up here, we're getting more and more dynamics cutting in, see? More and more manifestations of dynamics. Wider and wider periphery. And I don't think really this thing can be drawn as a straight V. It's more like a couple of curves, you know? But it's a more complex curve even than that, because here is an analytical curve, series of curves, and here is a reactive series of curves. The reactive mind is trying to destroy. It is set together on the basis of organism survival through destruction. There's the law of tooth and claw in the jungle. But up above that level, we're starting to get analytical key in, feed in. Analytical computations come in more and more, and you get wider and wider peripheries of survival. You could draw it like this. Here's at the center of this series of concentric circles, we have the individual at 0.1. He's going down to the vanishing point there. That's right toward death, but a little bit further out, he can influence. This, you might say, is the graph of influence of the environment. Out here at 0.5, this individual's merely trying to influence three, four, or individuals. Rarely tries to influence an organization. Out here, we're getting an influence of an organization, and so on. Here's a wide periphery of influence. But you notice that this can be drawn, this series of concentric circles can be drawn for survival, or it can be drawn for succumb. This series of concentric circles drawn for succumb means, I want to bring death to mankind. I want to bring death to the organization. I want to bring death to friends. And clear into the center, I want to bring death to self. Way out here, on the above 2.0, I want to bring life for all of mankind and life and the universe in general. In here, I would like to bring about the persistence, survival, and the heightened state of the Elks Club. In here, I think I can make Mamie happy. And way inside here, I'm just barely able to live. Go away, leave me alone. This sort of a thing. So this could be sphere of influence. Also, it could be a graph of endowment. Also, it could be a graph of endowment. Now, Jeffersonian democracy has as its postulate that all men are created with equal rights under law. This is Hobson Jobsoned into all men are created equal. And this is picked up ideologically here and there in the world. And political buffoonery is done with it. Men are not equal. That's horrible, but factual. If you had a whole series of clears, you wouldn't have two of them equal. Not even with going into straining the definition of equal with Korzybski. You or I could stand there and look at two people and you'd realize they're not equal. One is superior to another on one point, and the first one is possibly superior to the other one on another point. In other words, it isn't a difference of whether this person is senior to this person or not. It's just one has a heavier concentration on this or less on that. There's differences amongst people. This comes about from many things, but one of the things it comes about from is theta endowment. Evidently, one person is more alive than another. You get a person out here on the perimeter, his endowment is liable to flood through the whole galaxy. I mean, he feels that way. You can get a person aberrated to the point where he feels that way and doesn't, but that's a manic. But his actual endowment is enough to cover quite a bit. Here, his endowment can cover a group. Here, his endowment can cover the family. And here, his endowment can cover himself. Now, there's your expanding periphery of endowment. There's evidently this. So you can be quite prepared to patch somebody up as well as you possibly can and find out then that they're able to be nice then to themselves. You can be prepared to find this to be true. But believe me, that's a tremendous advance for any individual. Robert Louis Stevenson's monument in San Francisco says to the effect that one of the first things a man has to learn is how to be a friend to himself. How many of you are friends of yourselves? I'm no pal of mine, I know. I sure wouldn't beat myself up the way I do, writing books and everything like anything of myself. Here we have these various differences. It's very easy to grade up these differences and look them over very analytically and be very dispassionate about it. You'll find out that when you start to get involved with pre-clears, particularly pre-clears where you're friends, that you're going to get in deep enough so that you become emotionally involved. You become affected, in other words, by the endowment. Your endowment's affected, the dynamics are affected, all this sort of thing is all scrambled up and affected. Well, the tone scale has been drawn for your protection. You follow it, and you'll find out that no matter how much you would love to believe that this guy that you, my lady, met at the bar last night is a shining knight in white armor, you'll notice that he is slightly given to not answering you. Watch it. Watch it. That's one column. Let's discuss children with him. Well, he likes them all right. They're kind of getting these rather noisy. You watch this bird. Because just as sure as the devil, a love affair with this individual will result in a broken heart. That's a hell of a thing to postulate, isn't it? And say that that will come true. But as a matter of fact, go back into that person's life and find out how many things collapsed in his periphery. Go back and find out how many failures there were. And you'll find out his life is strewn with failures. And the fellow who comes up and says, I am going to make an honest human being out of this person by setting an example. I shudder when I think of the cemeteries filled with individuals who have had this sentiment. Now, endowment has a lot to do with the magnitude the aberration will achieve. A fellow who is a 1.5 with a terrific endowment, boy, is he dynamite. I mean, this is just horrible. Terrific endowment and 1.5. Next thing you know, why, he's gotten in as the head of the Ku Klux Klan, or he's ruling Germany, or some darn cool thing like this. 1.5 of heavy endowment. And boy, the damage that will accrue in that guy's vicinity. But you can take some fellow who is a 1.5, but who's really angry. He just gets a little bit angry about the whole thing. Oh, once in a while, he'll bust a teacup. Now, between the two of them, who is the most potentially worthwhile of the society? Which one would you, as an auditor, be proudest of putting back into the society? The guy who had the teacup. Yeah? Mm-mm. Now, if you can take this 1.5 and bring him up the tone scale so that he will function, you've got a guy who will really influence his environment and influence it in the survival direction. He's very worthwhile. Now, this has been recognized by psychiatry. They realize that a heavy endowment makes a person more harmful. So what they do is cut up enough switchboards so that the endowment cannot be expressed. Well, that's efficient. It gets the fellow down to a point where he will occasionally break a teacup. Dave Dobbs was telling me about a fellow that used to stand and hit his fist against the wall. And before they gave him the prefrontal lobotomy, he really hit that wall. He crash, crash, he'd go into the wall, crash. And then after they gave him the prefrontal lobotomy, he'd walk up to the wall and he'd Now, that was a real advance. Real advance. Now, by checking off endowment, by cutting off endowment, you could either interpolate a fellow down the tone scale or you could cut off his endowment a little bit, one way or the other. But the endowment is normally cut off physiologically or is affected physiologically. For instance, you could burn him up with an electric shock machine or do something intelligent like this, and it would cut down his endowment. But it wouldn't change him much on the tone scale. But he wouldn't be as harmful to other people. That's important. There was this advertising executive who used to go into terrible rages and throw ink pots and jump up and down and scream, but that fellow put out a lot of advertising. He was one of these acute 1.5s. He would occasionally go into 1.5. He did it often enough so that people got alarmed. Most of the time, the fellow was operating above 2.0, and he was operating constructively. But if somebody'd interpolate him, boy, would he come in there and smash down on 1.5. So they gave him an electric shock. So now he's got a job sweeping the place out. But he sure gets mad now at that broom. Now, you don't want to do this as auditors. What you want to do is preserve the endowment. And not only preserve the endowment, but lift it up, disinterbulate it, and lift it up the tone scale. Now, a person can be made more obedient by depressing him down to apathy. Authoritarian auditing can depress him down to apathy. Now, it's only necessary, in order to do this, it's very simple to suppress people on the tone scale. Very simple. All you have to do this, is just interpolate them further. Interpolate them more. Confuse them more. And I'll give you a method of doing that. We had an argument here the other evening, and I had to run it out of a pre-clear. I mean, I told him how to enforce and restrain ARC. Gave an example of how to argue with somebody who was trying to push your buttons using black Dianetics on them. All you do is give them enforce, inhibit. You know, I really would like to tell you about people, you know, you should like people more. You really ought to like people more. You shouldn't hate them. You should like them. Because I've been listening to people lately and they don't like you very much, you know, and you ought to increase this. Of course, the big gunshot on this sort of thing is you ought to pay more attention. You understand so poorly. You know, give them the 1-2, enforced ARC, inhibited ARC, and preferably in the same sentence. Listen to two people arguing sometimes and listen to them doing that. Enforced, inhibited, ARC, and then they'll hit the big grouper, big mass on the whole thing. Boom, you're dumb. This atom bombs them. All right. Interpolation and disorganization and incomplete thinking, disorderly action are all interpolative. You should remember, this is an auditor. I'll give you an example. All right. By the way, canceled on this command. You tell your pre-clear. All right. I want you... Is there a chain available? No, excuse me. Do you have an incident? Now, what is the basic on this chain? All right, go to that. You sure you're there? We'll go to an earlier one. All right, let's scan forward all the way to present time. Then you get tired of sitting there, and you get halfway to present time, and you say, let's go back to the beginning and scan it again. Actually, it's only necessary to be that careless with pattern in order to interpolate the devil out of people. They start to do something, and then you tell them to do something else, and so on. So what you want to do is codify all of your patter, and this is very constructive. And you notice that it's very hard to build a cathedral without drawing some plans. And if the plans don't lay out exactly what kind of a cathedral you have, then the cathedral is going to fall down or do something else. Now, it works just that way in auditing. You work with your pre-clear on a highly organized basis. You agree with him, for instance, that when I tell you to go to the bottom, the earliest incident on the chain, I mean the earliest available incident to you without straining, right? The earliest available incident. Now, when I ask you if you're there, why, you tell me whether you are or not. When you tell me that you are, then I will say to you, from there forward to present time, begin scanning. And you start at the moment I snap my fingers. See, that's good organization. And then you never vary the pattern with it. Keep the pattern the same. You'll find out that he comes off much more smoothly. I'm pointing up. What's the difference between survival and non-survival? Planning, prediction, understanding, organization, these are survival things. And what are succumbing things? Disorderly things. A sine wave, a smooth voice, is a survival thing. But a jagged noise wave voice is a succumb thing. Now, there's the difference between the two levels. On 2.0 down, you have disorganization, careless, non-thinking, impulsive, use of force, use of drive, push on a messed level. Above that level, you have constructive leading, reasoning, organization, good planning. This business about surviving comes very important to you as auditors, because you're trying to pick somebody up in about 90% of the people you work. You're trying to pick somebody up out of a succumb band and bring him up to where you live. Unfortunately, the techniques we've got now will sneak him up over the band. He doesn't find out about it till it's too late. That's actually what you're doing. Now, this doesn't mean that occasionally you won't have a pre-clear smile at you very happily and walk out of the office and go blow his brains out. As a matter of fact, we've just been lucky. We've been shot in the pants with luck. Because something like 10-15% of the patients ought to go blow their brains out. They don't. And that's remarkable. It really is. Because when you start handling people who are chronically below 2.0, when you start handling them down in that band, you're handling somebody who would rather go toward succumb than survive. The theta on the case wants to survive. That's the analytical level that's above 2.0. There's a very little bit of this. You interpolate that, and all you've got left on the case is the N theta, which wants to succumb. You ever see a case go down into apathy on you? Suddenly, fellow just lie there. Well, he doesn't care whether he runs it or not now. Trace it back to the moment before when you gave him something disorganized or changed his mind about something. You can make a blunder, not a blunder of an auditor's code magnitude, but you can make a blunder with some of these people, which merely gives them a sense that you are not organized with them, so this means to them that there isn't an ARC line between you. And at that moment, that snaps, and boom, they're in apathy, right there. This is a very nice thing. You're professional auditors. You have to handle cases along in this level. A book auditor should never, as a matter of fact, wouldn't have very much to do with the cases which we handle routine. They throw up their hands in horror over most of these cases. Trying to work somebody at 1.1 who is really, who has some free theta which gets up there to 2.1. Super antagonism, see, on the one level, but covert hostility operating on the lower level, and oh boy. How the auditor can sit there and take some of the abuse that he gets from this pre-clear without knocking the pre-clear over the head with a couch surpasses one's understanding. What a temptation it is to say, listen, bud. That's all you've got to do. That's all you've got to do is just say, listen, bud, you're going to do this or else, see? And boom, crash. And he says, all right, I'll do it. And you think this is good, see? You say, well, I guess I showed him. So he goes home that night and takes some psychoanalysis or strychnine or something else. And you haven't got a pre-clear anymore. And you followed the time-honored line of obliterating the pre-clear rather than the aberration. Survive and succumb. If you divide the tone scale off into those two levels, you'll sure understand it. Processing in general, a heck of a lot better. I was going to show you in addition this afternoon the graph of all possible aberrations and all possible computations. You got time for it?
Yeah.
It's very brief. You ought to copy this. You ought to copy this, and someday when you haven't got anything better to do, just sit there and look at it for a while and try to make up various situations that fit this thing, and it's sort of a game in advance of crossword puzzles. You'll be finding that you're giving yourself more straight wire than you've ever had from any auditor. Well, let's take the dynamics. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Here's the dynamic of self. Sex, group, man, life, mess, theta, and there he is. All right. By the way, that seven, there's some magical numbers here. That seven is a very magical number, self-divisible only by itself or something of the sort, and a lot of other things. And it's been used in mysticism and magic and metaphysics and psychiatry and everything. That thing's really been around for a long time and is usually the number assigned to mysticism and that sort of thing. There's a lot of symbology behind this. But putting eight up there... I thought of this the other day. I was looking at these numbers, and this is a bad thing to do because the eight, the primary symbol for eight, when these numbers were brought into Greece very early, that's two money bags. And that is the symbol for money and wealth, if we call it the eighth dynamic. So I don't want you to think, if any of you knew this, that I was being sarcastic. I wouldn't possibly be sarcastic. Now, this is all possible aberrations. No kidding. It works out. All right. Now, we've got all of these dynamics. Now, take any one of those dynamics and put it here. And then substitute in this position each dynamic in turn. Now, for instance, let's put dynamic 2 here, the second dynamic. Each and every dynamic and each and every exterior manifestation of the dynamic may act as a suppressor on any other one of the dynamics. Now, you got that. In other words, the group, the drive for group, can be suppressed by groups. The drive on groups can suppress also the first, the second, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh dynamics. You understand how that is? Well, let's take a fellow on his first dynamic. He isn't a friend of himself. His first dynamic is suppressing his first dynamic. You understand how that would be? So he's suppressing himself. You could say that. But we're talking pretty skitsy there. He'd really be a group. More importantly, we know that the first dynamic can be suppressed easily by the second dynamic. If you will pardon the risque statement, like they say in the Lifebuoy ads, you're no good in bed, so you're no good. You know? Are you attractive physically, they say, and they Lysol ad? Well, then your marriage will run along fine. In other words, there's the first and the second dynamic being hauled in together. And it says automatically, sexual impotency means individual incompetency. As a matter of fact, we have a whole philosophy, or whatever you call it, running through the society right now, that says the only thing wrong with a man is the fact that the second dynamic is the second dynamic, is the second dynamic, is a rose, is a rose, is a rose. Of course, you can't work any aberration out of that. So they have a tough time. But that's actually, you just draw the interconnections here. Now, we'll consider this as the first dynamic. What are the ARC breaks between A? By the way, somebody driving down the street with me the other day said, ARC. And then laugh was an arc welding. That's what we're doing, arc welding. All right. Here is your inner suppression. A's only suppress A's. R's only suppress R's. C only suppresses C. In other words, you got likes suppressing each other. Now, the A of the first dynamic gets interpolated, let us say, on the A of the first dynamic. You don't like yourself. You're your own worst enemy. That is an A in turbulence on the thing. So there is your A interaction. Now, this can be enforced or inhibited. You have to like yourself. You don't like yourself. Now, your reality, I don't know, I can't make up my mind. There is I trying to agree with I. Reality falls down between the guy, first dynamic, and his first dynamic. And C, communication. How many people haven't got any sonic? Or how many people have you run into that could hear themselves talk when you took them back down the time track but couldn't hear anybody else talk? That's an enforced first dynamic communication line. It hasn't just been left alone. It's enforced usually when it's that loopy. How many people have you taken back down the line? They never say a word. They can't pick up their own statements on the track, but they can pick up everybody else's statements on the track. There you've got a break between the first dynamic communication and the first dynamic communication. See? It's important, doesn't it? Now, here's a fellow that can see everything in the picture but himself. Where's he? He's gone. That's, there are actually cases like this. This is first dynamic.
The matter is in balance.
All right, let's take the first dynamic to the second dynamic. The interaction between the first and the second dynamic. A, R, C. Second dynamic. Affinity. This is rather obvious. Your affinity line for the first dynamic. A person is thought well of through the medium of the second dynamic by another person. Family, children, so on. Children like him. That's good. Children don't like him. He's told children don't like him. That's your, starts your break off. And we just go up the line and draw these things. Work it out. It's good mental exercise. A, R, C. And it goes right on. A, R, C. A, R, C. Now this interaction of situations is all possible pleasure moments and all possible aberrations. You run it for one. The graph for one. Now you run the graph for two. Now you run the graph for three. Now you run it for four. Now you run it for five, for six, for seven. And in this society, you have to run it for eight, which is why eight is there. The reason you have to run it for eight is because the person goes out, the person's been told that God made this world, and he thinks this is wonderful, and then God made this world because God was good and wanted you to be happy and so forth, and he's running on this kind of computation, coming to somebody, comes along and says, this isn't God, and that cuts down the fact that it can be a good world. You see how evolved it can get. So you have to run eight in any society that has a supreme being. And remember that eight has two sides. I found a terrific affinity between a guy and the devil once. It's a fact, he. Terrific affinity. And another guy was scared to death, and what he was really scared of was the devil. And we finally worked it out that it was the devil, and it wasn't until we got off about 16 locks on what the devil was going to do to him that he found out that his pop was the devil. And he was the devil because in the second dynamic, Mama had ordinarily said, you old devil, you. Yeah, well, that's a hell of a looking mess, isn't it? But those interconnective lines, I'm not asking you to digest this, all at a glimpse, but you look that thing over and think about it a little bit. You'll see, here are your pleasure moments. When was it fun to be by yourself? When was it fun to take a walk by yourself? Here's a pleasure moment. Well, the guy will think around, and all of a sudden he remembers a time when it was. There was a time when he wanted to be by himself once, and so on. Now, of course, on the second, you think offhand that it's very obvious. You think, oh, well, that second, the second first, that's the end of that, and that's, we'll go on and skip the rest of it. Better know something about this graph, because the amount of suppression on the second dynamic from the third is worse than the second dynamic on the first. The suppression of the third dynamic on the second dynamic is enormous, and the suppression of the second dynamic on the third dynamic in America today is enormous. And you start looking over just this angle in your pre-clear, and if you look over just this computation, all of a sudden you're seeing a large number of possible combinations of aberration here, which you might not ordinarily think of in handling your pre-clear. You can actually figure a pre-clear out and find out where his maximum damping is. Where is dynamics maximally damped out? You find out, for instance, this person can just contact one wonderfully and just do swell on six, on three, do fair. And all of a sudden, find this person is ashamed of being a man or a human being. This person doesn't believe in human beings. Here is four, not Galley West. And you say automatically, somebody has told him something about this. Well, that's essentially true, but you're not going to get the situation unless you start examining four against all the rest of the dynamics. And you start evaluating four as being suppressed by all the other dynamics in rotation, and each one of these by ARC, and the first thing you know, you'll pick up combinations of aberration that you really hadn't known existed. Yeah, you know, there's some fantastic ones. You suddenly call it to the guy's attention. You don't tell him there is such a thing, but just asking, for instance, well, was there a time when you felt that human beings were going to take away what you owned? Oh, them goddamn socialists. You find out Papa was a banker. And then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of stuff starts to concatenate off. Boom, 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 boom. You wouldn't have thought of that ordinarily. So you can sit there and mechanically figure out how many ways this guy is aberrated. But also you can figure out all the ways that he can have had fun. And this is more important to the people you will be processing, because you have to spend more time trying to figure out where they had some fun in their lives than they'll be able to recall. You're going to have to dig for a time when this guy was able to sit down and draw a long breath and have a real pleasure moment. You running back to the time when he won the horse show, and he's receiving this cup, and there's 8,000 people present, and they're all applauding, so forth. And you say, boy, we're really going to get him through this pleasure moment, aren't you? And the guy starts to run a terror charge. You say, well, I failed on that one. Let's see. Let's take him someplace else on the track. There's quite a bit in the new book on pleasure that a couple of people have found awful. It had never struck them before that a 1.1 really gets his fun out of pulling the wings off of a little bird. Somebody shot the little bird, see, and the little bird fell down, is lying there suffering and gasping, and so you pull its wings off slow. And that was a lot of fun. I'm not kidding. You can really run pleasure moments at the band level where your preclear is. Run a 1.5, the guy somewhere along the line has been knocked down from being a 1.5 to a 1.1, see. Somewhere he's been knocked down from one to the next stage. Well, that's great. You're going to be able to find early pleasure moments where this guy got a big kick out of really getting mad. And if you can dig one of those things up, you will blow some of the suppressors that knocked him from 1.5 down to 1.1. So you see, there's more to it than meets the eye offhand. Here's, in other words, all possible pleasure moments, all possible aberrations. And I ask you to draw up yourselves, sitting around with nothing else to do, just a series of graphs on this, and try to compare these against one against the other. Compare it for your own life. I think if you did it thoroughly, you'd wind up at 4-0.
What's the total number of combinations?
Total number of combinations. Of three combinations for three combinations for you. Who's going to figure this out for me? Good. It's quite a few. It's quite a few. Now, there is the latest assist that we have on straight wire. This isn't in the book. I give this to you. This is the latest assist we have on straight wire and on lock scanning.
576.
It's way up there. I assure you, you can probably find tens of thousands of blocks on cases with this. You can certainly find hundreds of blocks. You know, an auditor shouldn't have to sit there and use his imagination hour in and hour out, because half the time his preclear isn't going to help him out any. Now, there was hurdy-gurdy processing, straight wire, whereby you took ARC inhibition and enforcement for each person in that had been around the individual on each dynamic. It gets a little more complicated, but you've still got to know something about hurdy-gurdy. Do you know anything about that system? Works pretty good. I mean, it lets you keep track of what you're doing. But this system here could be laid out in three strata. It's your tone scale again. Domination by nullification is a method of handling human beings. I dare say there are probably one or two people are present here today who have noticed this happening, domination by nullification. There may even be somebody here today that has had it pulled on him. The theory behind domination by nullification, it's a very simple one. The individual who pulls it considers himself so powerless that he has to make the individual with whom he's associating completely powerless in order to associate further. This is a very short-term method of committing suicide, because you start pulling people down the tone scale, and as a person goes down the tone scale, they become more and more and more dangerous. An apathy case is a very dangerous individual to have around, but not terribly active, so we really don't worry about him. I suppose one of your highest levels of dangerousness would be overt dangerousness is your grief case. You keep pushing a person down to grief, and this person keeps going down to the point where they're going to kill you too, with tears. Well, this is the coward doing it with a kiss. Domination by nullification. That is ARC inhibited. That's pretty low on the tone scale. That's down around 1-1 and down. 1-2, something like that, and down. Domination by inhibition. So the fellow says, you can't look at that, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and there is no reality, and all is hopeless, and there is no future, and there is no nest, and there is no time track, and oh, poor me, and I would love to do that, but I hate to have to tell you this, but people have been saying about you that 1-1, 0-5, so on. Now, right above this is your enforced band. Domination, outright, forthright, domination by force. Here's where you get ARC enforced. You've got to listen to me. Okay? You've got to look. Other intelligent statements. That's enforced ARC. Now, up here is ARC neither inhibited or enforced, but merely pointed out or existing, which is pleasure moments. So you've got here 1-3 levels. So don't look at hurdy-gurdy or this type of auditing, straight wire, as being something different, because it isn't. Here is any straight wire or any lock scanning or any situation is where ARC and their what they group into, which is understanding, inhibited. Here it is, dominated, and here is ARC enhanced. Other people, groups, so forth, make pleasure available without forcing it on the individual. That should tell you also something about how to give somebody a good time. You don't force one on them. This system should point out to you a lot of holes in cases that might be overlooked unless you were going at it systematically. You should, if you're working a pre-clear over a long period of time, you should definitely do one of these checks on it. Find out what dynamics are suppressing what dynamics, and then start to take it apart. The first thing you know, some of the strangest computations will come out of this guy's life. You don't have to think them up first, which is the beauty of it. Because in order to think up all the strange computations that this fellow would have, and all the inhibitions, and all the enforcements, and all of this, and all of that, you'd have to be that guy, and it's bad practice to keep shifting valence and being the pre-clear. It's a strain on the auditor. Well, I hope this afternoon has had a small factor, too, which you can use. I know that you will have probably a lot of questions about this one way or the other. I'm sure they can be taken up adequately in the seminars. The seminar leaders, I would like very much to give me any interesting question or any general question or any super unresolved question after it has been thrashed out, if it's still in that status. Give it to me tomorrow, and I will take those up during tomorrow afternoon's session. And I wish to thank you very much for your good attention this afternoon.